Proverbs chapter 2, if you would turn there. We are in our second week of our 14-week summer series, The Way of the Wise. And Hannah, I need that. I have it. Thank you. The Way of the Wise, and we're going to be in it all summer, and the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, Psalms, Proverbs, Song of Songs, Ecclesiastes, and the book of Job. And it's going to be a bit of a whirlwind tour, but we're going to see some great stuff. Today, we're going to look at the Proverbs a bit in chapter 2, and really talking about walking with God or the path of wisdom. It is very practical stuff. It's real life. It is down to earth, and it's addressing the sort of issues that we all face as people. And maybe it's a good time right now for us to remind ourselves of what the Christian life is. It's easy sometimes to forget, but just for everybody, let me just remind you that Christians are people who believe a certain set of truths, a certain set of doctrines. Jesus is God. That our problem is disobedience and sin. That Jesus came to die on the cross, and in a mysterious transaction that probably none of us can quite figure out, our sins became his. He took our place. He was our substitute. And so Christians believe these sorts of things, and many, many more. But I want to remind you as we look at Proverbs today that the Christian life is much more than just believing the right stuff. The Christian life is about following Jesus. It's about a new lifestyle of this kingdom. It's about entering into a new way of living. So it's really, really important to remember that. The Christian life is about God-centered and God-directed living in this world. There is a real earthiness to the call of Jesus. When Jesus says, follow me, it is not an upper story religious deal at all. There's an earthiness, a practicality to actually following Jesus. So let me begin with a question or two. It actually struck me this morning during worship. I don't know what else Kurt is going to lead us in, but it struck me, Esau was leading at the 10 o'clock service, and it struck me how many of the worship songs we sing actually begin with some sort of a question. You know, one of the ones we sang this morning is, who is this King of Glory? And then the song goes on to answer it. Well, a lot of times the scriptures begin with a question. And I think a lot of times we should begin with questions as we begin to ponder the scriptures. So let me just ask you this question. What do you think your life will be like in 10 years? Okay? If you're really old, 5. Okay? And if you're really young, maybe 10 to 15, maybe even 20. What do you think you'll be like? As a person, what do you think you'll be doing? What do you think you'll be doing relationally, financially, and for our purposes here this afternoon, spiritually? And do you think you'll be more mature spiritually as time goes on? Is that something that you think is going to happen in your life? Dallas Willard, who spoke at one of our retreats some years ago, is a very well-known Christian author, and he's kind of become famous for asking a crucial question where he says, what is your plan to become more like Jesus? And usually when that question gets asked, most Christians just kind of get a blank stare on their face. I don't have a plan to become more like Jesus. Well, our lives will follow a path, a course, a way of intentionally doing things, or maybe unintentionally doing things. We're on a road spiritually. And in the book of Proverbs, this path that is talked about so often is presented in just the sharpest contrast you can ever imagine. Life is either lived under God's authority, and that's described as the wise path, or it's lived independently of God's decision, and the writer of Proverbs calls this the foolish path. Path. The word comes up 100 times in the book of Proverbs, and it gets translated in different ways. And as I read this passage here in just a minute, some of your translations might be slightly different, but the word is the same word in Hebrew, and it gets translated as path, road, way, course. There might be a couple more, but I think those are the main ones. Well, we're going to take a look at this path just for the next couple of minutes, and I want you to know what this path is like. Now, a lot of you have in your cars maybe a GPS, and a lot of you will use MapQuest to figure out how to get places, and it's fascinating, isn't it? You know, if you want to figure out how to go somewhere, you just, you know, plug it in and it'll say turn right, go 2 miles, get on highway such and such, then turn left and da-da-da, and all, bingo, you're there. Well, I want you to know that the wisdom talked about in Proverbs, in this path that is going to be described, is not like that. It is not a GPS or a MapQuest sort of approach to the Christian life. We're going to see what it's like. What is this wisdom? Reed gave us a definition of wisdom last week, and he said that wisdom is the skillful application of God's truth over time, tempered by experience. That's okay. My definition's a little better. I would say, and I would define it this way, that wisdom is the art of living skillfully under God's direction and authority. It's the art, and I emphasize art part of it, of living skillfully under God's direction and under His authority. The picture of our lives as a path has some implications, doesn't it? When you think of a path or a roadway that we'd be on, it has implications. The first implication is that we're starting somewhere. The path begins somewhere. So to apply the teaching in the next couple of minutes, I want you to ask the question right now, what is my spiritual condition? Or another way of putting it, what path am I on? That's an implication of this metaphor, or this picture of the Christian life as a path. Second question is, where are we going? When you're on a path, you're on a road, unless you're just going for a casual drive, you're going somewhere. And in the Christian life, this path leads to a destiny. That destiny is heaven. And I want to ask you the question, do you know that your life has an eternal destiny? And then third, I think an implication of this path idea is that there are detours on the path. There's ways that you can get off the road, you can get off the path. And so the question I want you to ask yourself is, how are you navigating the detours of life? Proverbs chapter 2, verses 1 through 15. Let me just, before I read a couple of these verses, show you the quick outline of where we're going to go in the next couple of minutes. This passage, I think, both asks and answers three questions about walking with God on this wise path. The first is this, is how do you get this wisdom that's being described? How do we get it? What is the source of the wisdom? And then what are the benefits of this wisdom in our lives? Verse 1, the words of a father to his son. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure. How do you get this wisdom? In these just short four verses, I want you to see how they go together. And I've kind of highlighted them here and underlined the key words. This is classic Hebrew poetry where a thought or an idea is repeated. Same idea using slightly different words. And I just want you to see this, but all four of these verses, all eight of these statements are essentially saying one simple thing. Okay, it's really easy. But just look at it. Accept what? My words. Now the same statement said in a different way. Store up my commands. This reminds us of Psalm 119, 11. You know, thy word, the psalmist says, I've hidden my heart so that I might not sin against you. And here the writer of Proverbs is saying, boy, accept the words of God. Accept the scriptures. Accept my commands, my statutes. Turning your ear to wisdom, applying your heart to understanding. Again, this same idea. Call out for insight, cry aloud for understanding. There's some passion in these words. Look for it as for silver. Search for it as for hidden treasure. Now, I would suggest that all of these statements are essentially saying one simple thing. Fight aggressively. Strive to stay on this wise path of walking with God. The father is saying to a son who's at a crucial time in life, I want you to fight for this. I want you to stay on this path. And he multiplies it by saying it in different ways, but essentially the same thing. How do you get this wisdom? It takes a certain aggressiveness. This last picture of silver or hidden treasure is such a great one. It's such an interesting picture of really the Christian life and of searching for this wisdom. My guess is that a lot of families, probably a lot of you here, this last Easter had an Easter egg hunt. Is that a lot of people have an Easter egg hunt? Maybe? Okay. Come on. Okay, good. I'm getting a few head shakes. Just so you know, it's pure paganism, but it's a lot of fun, okay? It's just a fertility cult. That's all it is. But anyway, we do it, and it's kind of fun. And so you get eggs, little chocolate eggs, or the kind that break in half. And you put different types, sorts of candies or different little treats in there. And then you hide them around a park or in the backyard, and then the kids get to go get them, and they run around, and they get candy, and it's kind of cool. And that's how we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. So, now, it's just kind of a fun little thing we do. But let's pretend your family gathering, and some long-lost uncle from Minnesota comes out, and he takes one of those little eggs that break in half, the plastic type, and he writes out a check for $5,000. And he puts it in the egg, and then he hides it in the yard somewhere. And he says to the family, to the kids, "Kids, by the way, one of the eggs has $5,000 in it that I want you to have." Now that changes, doesn't it, the dynamic of the Easter egg hunt. You guys down here are so cool who don't do Easter egg hunts. You're in the hunt now, right? And you're knocking over your little brother and sister, getting them out of the way, because you want the $5,000. Well, that's the picture that the writer of Proverbs is saying. Is this, we want you to hunt for something because it's a treasure. This stuff is so cool, it's so important, it's so vital that I want you to go after it like it was silver or gold or something really, really important. There can be a sense in a lot of people's lives that wisdom, and you read that word in the Bible, that wisdom is something that you're just born with. Like, oh, I was born with great athletic ability or with musical ability, or that maybe God just kind of zaps you with wisdom. And I want you to know that's not the picture that the Scriptures present. Most Christians, I'm going to generalize here, most Christians are way too passive in the Christian life. There's kind of a collective yawn and a leaning back and like, well, whatever you want, Lord. And here we find a portion of Scripture that is saying, I want you to be aggressive in going after this wisdom. Turn the page. Let me just show you how this works just a little bit more. Chapter 4, let me begin in verse 4. This is a section where there's a personification of wisdom. You know what a personification is? It's just when you take an object and you make it into a person. So you can talk about something like, Mother Nature or Mother Earth. Or Uncle Sam, or if you have a boat, maybe you got a sailboat or something, boats are almost always named as a feminine, right? Well, that's a personification. Well, wisdom, this godly wisdom, is many times personified and referred to as she. Now, I want you to look at this. Verse 4, chapter 4. Lay hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live. Now, I want you to notice how many times the word get comes up. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom. She will protect you. Love her. That's wisdom. She will watch over you. Wisdom is supreme. Therefore, what? Get wisdom. Though it costs you all you have, get understanding. Esteem her. She will exalt you. Embrace her. She will honor you. She will set a garland of grace on your head and present you with a crown of splendor. Back to chapter 2. All through the book of Proverbs, there are warnings about getting off this right path with God. And the writer of Proverbs points to the dangers in life that would separate us from godly living. And it is so easy to get off the track in our Christian lives, isn't it? It's so easy to get waylaid and to get sidetracked and to get kind of lost spiritually. It happens, and I think we should just admit it, to all of us. I don't know about you, but frequently in my life, I will be driving on the freeway, the 101 right down here, and I'll be buzzing along, and I will go like 2-3 off-ramps past where I'm going. Does that happen to anybody else? Good. Help me, man, because I don't want to be the only guy. I also go up to my front door with my clicker sometimes and try and click my front door of my house. But don't worry about me. I've been doing this since I was like 16. It's just, but sometimes I'll be just buzzing along in my own universe. I think all of a sudden I'm like way down in Montecito. I'm thinking, I don't even know where I'm going. Who am I going to see? Who am I having coffee with today? I'm convinced that many people in this room, including myself, can be so preoccupied, so intent on life, that we can miss our off-ramp. We can miss the fact that there are detours in life. And many times, it's because we're doing good things. I'm not saying we do bad things. But we can become so focused that we lose sight of the spiritual detours in our life. The writer of Proverbs is saying to his son, "Son, it is dangerous out there. Be careful. Stay on the wise path under God's direction." Proverbs in chapter 2 in particular, but really the whole book, is calling us to be people who pay attention. Now, I know that there's some older folks here today, just as there were at the 10 o'clock service, who's saying, thinking possibly in your mind, "Man, this is really a good portion of scripture for younger people. It's good for these guys. You know, it's good for those junior high school, college students." Well, yeah, it is. But it's also really good for people in their 80s and 90s. It is very possible to get waylaid, to get off this path, even late in life. And the great illustration of that is King Solomon. Solomon, who's credited with writing much of the Proverbs, is a man who began his life well as a young man. And then we read in 1 Kings 11 some tragic words. "As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods. And his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of his father David has been." It is possible to start well or to do well in your 20s or your 30s or your 40s and find a detour spiritually in your 50s, 60s, and on into old age. So please don't think this is just for, you know, young people. This is for all of us. We pick a path in life. We make decisions, and to be honest, it's not always easy to see where they will lead in the future. And for those of you who are younger or older, I want you to realize that the decisions we make have tremendous consequences in our life. I told this story some time ago. I'm going to tell you the story again, but then there's a part B to it, just briefly. I had a friend when I was in high school, who was one, he wasn't my only surfing buddy, but he was one of my main surfing friends, named Bob. And we surfed a lot together and did surfing contests and traveled a lot. And he was just one of my real close surfing buddies. When I was 21 years old, Bob and I moved to the North Shore of Hawaii. And we lived there for a year and just doing the surfing thing. And shortly after we went there, Bob moved to Maui. He got a job at a restaurant in Maui. That was the last time I saw him. So you can do the math. I can't. It's a long time ago. About 2 years ago, I was reading the LA Times on a Sunday morning, having my cup of coffee up early, and I'm reading the LA Times. The LA Times has a Sunday magazine, the LA Times magazine, I think they call it, and it just does special articles. And they had an article in there on the huge industry in the San Fernando Valley of making pornographic films. And I'm reading it, fascinating story, and there's the name of my friend, who is one of the primary producers of pornography in the United States, if not the world. And I'd heard rumors of that, and I'd you know, had a few inklings from other friends, and I just thought, I hadn't seen this guy in, you know, this would be well over 35 years at this point. I thought, how does somebody get from here to here? There was a trajectory in life. There was a path. There was a detour that at some point, this guy who was my surfing buddy, he got on a path. Now, about 2 months ago, I had lunch with another old friend. I guess when you get older, you start wondering about your old friends. Is that what happens? I guess. Well, I hadn't seen this guy since 1973. He was the last time I saw him, another surfing friend. Both these guys are not Christians. The last time I saw him was at my wedding 35 years ago. And I found out that he passes through town for work. He's a rep for a wetsuit company. And we got together and had lunch and caught up. It was great. And as old friends will do, we started talking about common friends we used to have, and we started talking about Bob, and he is still in contact with Bob and knew this whole story. And he had the most interesting thing. I wrote it down. He said, well, you could see it coming with where his life was headed when we were young. Here's a guy at 21 who now in his late 50s is producing sickness. But his life started, there was a detour somewhere early that if you'd told him, this is where your life is going to end up, he probably could have never figured that out. But our decisions lead us in certain directions. What is the source of this wisdom? Secondly, would you look at verses 5 and 6? Then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. What is the source of this wisdom? I think, pure and simple, it's God. God is the source of staying on the wise path in life. And these two verses here really sound like a repetition of chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction, or discipline, depending on your translation. Some of you might remember, if you're old enough, the old TV show Father Knows Best. You know, Father Knows Best was so cool. It started as a radio show, and then in 1954 became a TV show and ran until 1960. And the title says it all. You know, it was kind of a rosy, naive, inaccurate picture of American family life. But Father Knows Best, kind of cute, huh? Well, I think we could title the Proverbs, God Knows Best. Last week, in Reed's sermon, one of his points about the fear of the Lord was, if we're going to have a true fear of the Lord, it requires a submissiveness on our part. If we're to allow God to direct us in the path of wisdom, we have to, at some level, be submissive to God. And I would suggest that one of the biggest hindrances to walking with God, and everything I'm trying to talk about in these few moments together, this wise living that is being described in Proverbs, is a rugged independence. This sense that we are the source of all wisdom, that we don't really need God in our lives. You know, there's a lot of cults in our world, a lot of kind of strange religious aberrations out there. I've decided to name a new cult that I see everywhere, both inside the church and outside the church. And here's what I'm going to call it. It's the cult of my way. I see it everywhere in our world where people want to do everything independently, separate from God, the cult of my way. And the primary characteristic of this cult is a stubbornness of heart that insists on going life alone. God is nice in this cult, but he is not necessary. And Proverbs will know none of that. Proverbs talks a lot about this cultic tendency. This tendency for people to go their own way. Listen to a few of them. 14:12. There is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to what? You guys know it, say it. Death. 12:15. The way of the fool seems right to him, but a wise man listens to advice. And that advice is not just from friends, it's from God. A man, this is one, I really like this one. You know, God gets blamed for so much stuff that he had nothing to do with. Let me listen to this one. This is cool. A man's own folly ruins his life, yet his heart rages against the Lord. You know people like that? They've made decisions that have really wrecked their life, and yet they're mad at God. Many of you, I know, coach a sports team or have, teach music, or involved somehow in education, either with kids or adults. And everybody who coaches or teaches or does anything like that where you're trying to impart something to someone else knows that it's almost impossible to lead somebody if they're uncoachable, if they've got their mind made up, if they won't listen. Just remind yourself that there is a correct path to life that God directs. Listen to advice. The writer of Proverbs says, accept instruction, and in the end, you will be wise. And we can tend to forget in our culture, in our world, that God wants to direct our steps, that there's not many paths, but there's one path. Jesus says the exact same thing in Matthew 7:13. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. And many have entered it, but small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life. And only a few will find it. Now, I want to say this really clearly. This path that we're talking about, this course, this godly wisdom, this does not mean that there is a blueprint for our lives. This does not mean that there are no gray areas in life. Of course there are. This does not mean that you will always know with crystal clear clarity what to do in a particular situation. But it does mean that those of us who know God are to follow a path, a course, a way of living that comes from God and not just ourselves. And I want to call you this afternoon to settle the issue of whether or not you can trust God with your life. And I don't just mean your salvation, but your sexuality, your plans, your finances, your values in life. Can you trust God not just with your salvation, but with your life? Number three, this passage that we're reading asks the question, what are the benefits of wisdom, this path? And let's just finish it out with verses 7 through 15, and you'll see again how this works. And I'm going to emphasize some of these words. If you're giving the underlining in your Bibles, you can just really see how the writer of Proverbs here just goes on and on to emphasize something. He holds victory, there's one of them, in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless. For he guards the course of the just and protects the way of the faithful ones. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you and understanding will guard you. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men, from men whose words are perverse, who leave the straight paths and walk in dark ways, who delight in doing wrong, who rejoice in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are deceivious in their ways. What are the benefits of this wisdom, of walking with God? And a path that he would lay out for us. Well, victory, shield, guards, protects, good path, pleasant to your soul. These are the phrases that just jump off the page that tell us. Does all this sound good? This path of life described in Proverbs is always presented as a wonderful way to live life. You know, last week on Sunday at both the 10 and the 4, my heart was really moved, as it usually is on graduation Sunday when the high school seniors were kind of commissioned. You know, we blessed them and prayed for them, and they were up here. And then youth workers and parents, we need a new stage because this stage is disastrous. But, you know, everybody was, you know, all around here. And I just thought it's a sweet time. A lot of those students, not all of them, but a lot of those students had been in this church a long time, some their whole lives. And in our church, there's a lot of you that are new to the body, and maybe you've just started having this be a part of your spiritual life and your church home in the last few months or years, and that's awesome. Welcome. And many here, I look at faces, I think, man, I'm going to try and not do the eye thing with you, but I look at some of you, I go, I knew that guy when he was young, and look at him now, you know. And you're thinking the same thing. I understand that. In a life together, what is it that those high school seniors have learned at Santa Barbara Community Church? And what is it that you've learned? What lessons about the Christian life, you know, when all the fluff is gone, have really kind of sunk in? And I want you to know that I hope that you have heard loud and clear over and over again that life works best when we live it following this path that God has set for us. Obeying his statutes, his laws, his commands. And that this stuff is not a burden or a bummer, but it is a blessing. And I want to say to parents and grandparents, shout it to the top of your lungs with your kids. Let's say it over and over again in as many different ways as we can. To follow this path that God has for us, it doesn't mean that we don't have problems or there won't be issues in our life or we won't have failures. I don't want this to be the least bit Pollyannish. But it is to say God has our best interests in mind. You want to know my best illustration? I thought of all kinds of interesting ways to illustrate this. And Mike gave it to me this week. We were talking about this. And Mike, in the college Bible study, is going to do the Way of the Wise. That's what we're studying for 14 weeks. And he says we're also going to do, what do you call it, the Way of the Unwise? The Way of the Not-So-Wise. Well, if we have a text, the Bible, for the Way of the Wise, you know what the text is for the Way of the Not-So-Wise? Santa Barbara News Press, Monday morning, the police blotter. I'm serious. I mean, the great thing about getting the Santa Barbara News Press is you have a lot of free time to do other stuff because it doesn't take any time to read it. A couple of animal pictures, you're good to go, you know? But get the Monday morning News Press, man. It is so cool because the police blotter, you know, of what happened over the weekend and all these weird things that happen in people's lives is the greatest illustration of the way of the unwise. God's laws, his statutes, his commands, however you want to phrase it, are for our benefit. They are good. They're for our protection. They're to be a shield. They're given to us so that life might go well. Junior high and high school guys, I hate picking on you, man, but get this one and you're going to get one of the most valuable spiritual lessons of all time. God has your best in mind in every area of life. Our passage is answered, I think, I hope, or at least gotten us off to a start on an answer. Three questions about walking with God and wise living. How do you get this wisdom? You got to fight for it. If you're passive, you're going to have a hard time being victorious in the Christian life. What is the source of this wisdom? It's God. It's not us. It's God's wisdom. It's his instruction in our lives. And what are the benefits of this wisdom? Well, God's a shield. He's our protection. He wants what's best for us. He wants our lives to go well. Mike is going to come in a minute and lead a little time of sharing and then lead us into the Lord's Supper. I want to end with a minute of silence, and I just want you to bow your heads. And I'm going to ask you two questions. I just want you to think and pray for a moment, kind of ponder this chapter that we've read. Here are the two questions. Are you on the path of wise living? Are you on the path of wise living? Second question. How are you navigating the detours that come into everybody's life? How are you navigating the detours that come into everybody's life?